to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm Mike Koenig. Bob Gartner is on controls. Well, we can start with Chris Christie. That's kind of a novelty. So apparently they had a government shutdown in New Jersey. And the deal was that, you know, kind of like a federal shutdown, they had to close the beaches, they had to close state offices, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this guy is just, I can't use the words. I'm sorry. Just substitute words in a blank. This guy is a, so Chris Christie, after having shut down the government because he wouldn't agree on a budget, they shut down the beaches during the holiday weekend. They chased away a Cub Scout pack, 25 kids, because, you know, the beach is closed. And then the governor, Governor Chris Christie, took his state governor helicopter with his family, with a couple of friends, and enjoyed this empty beach. It was like going, I guess, to a Caribbean island that you had all to yourself, except it was a publicly owned beach in New Jersey that was supposed to be closed. And first he denied it, and then the pictures showed up. You know, when we talk about these politicians that have no shame, they literally have no shame. You cannot shame them. People like Chris Christie and Trump and Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, I mean, these guys get to a level partly because they are entirely shameless. It's unfathomable. And, you know, I'm not a doctor, as they say. I'm not a doctor, but isn't that the kind of thing that at least borderline sociopaths do when they literally have no shame? There have been comments about some of the White House talking heads that they seem to say things that aren't true, even when it's not necessary to say things that aren't true. Now, my understanding as a layperson of a pathological liar, a pathological liar will lie even when the truth would serve as well. So just think about that. All right, so some of the topics that I've kind of picked for today. And, of course, it's open forum, you know, so you can talk about whatever you want. The phone number is 713-526-5738. Hey, Bob, I've got some kind of a message on my screen that says disconnected from server. Do you know what that is? No? Okay, well, I'll live with it. Okay, so we have a call, I guess, on hold? No? Yeah? Okay. I don't know that the screen is down. I have like a window up that says disconnected from server, reconnect, and I guess the option is yes.
We've got Jerry on the line.
Okay, well, I appreciate Jerry. Let me get through some of my stuff, which will take a few minutes, and then Jerry can talk about whatever's on his mind. Okay, so one of the questions I have is how many, and this is like a light bulb question, but I mean it seriously, how many Americans does it take for Trump to become a strongman? Now, he's got a support base that seems to represent about 30% of quote-unquote eligible voters or Americans or something, but roughly around 30%. Now, there are countries like Turkey and Hungary and Greece that with a support among the population of 30 or 35% as a plurality, that becomes enough to sway the politics in the country. Now, granted, most of those countries are, maybe all of them, are parliamentary. Turkey used to be parliamentary. So we have an article titled, as Trump wages war on the media, this is from the Washington Post from today. As Trump wages war on the media, the echoes of Erdogan grow louder. And just some excerpts. Trump's relentless war on America's mainstream media, cheesy hashtags and nicknames like Psycho Joe Scarborough and Low IQ Crazy Mika Brzezinski and Fake or Fraud CNN. For Trump, the relentless, this is from the article, the relentless drumbeat of anger against the press is a clear political tactic designed to stoke his base and build up a narrative of victimization. In Erdogan's case, his government, after a coup attempt, embarked on a vast purge of state institutions and civil society, imprisoning more than 100 journalists or forcing them into exile. Dozens of media outlets closed or taken over by the state. Newspapers that were once titans of the establishment have seen their editors criminalized and their offices raided. And both Erdogan and Trump paint their critics as threats to the nation. For example, over the weekend, Erdogan labeled, and I have to change my page here, Erdogan labeled a peaceful opposition protest march from Ankara to Istanbul as the work of, quote, terrorist sympathizers, unquote. Trump, on July 2nd, tweeted, "The dishonest media will never keep us from accomplishing our objectives on behalf of our great American people." We really need to take this stuff seriously. We really do. The Republicans are enablers. I think that they will go down in history, assuming history gets written, you know, truthfully, more or less. I think the Republicans will go down as cowards for allowing this to proceed the way it is proceeding. They are clearly enablers. I mean, if you've ever known an alcoholic or a drug addict, someone who hasn't hit rock bottom yet, that person is Trump. But that person has enablers, people that enable that person to continue drinking or continue taking drugs or continue whatever abuse they're engaging in or self-abuse they're engaging in. The Republican Party is an enabler of this, and apparently a gleeful enabler from what I've seen. Something else that, you know, I saw today that I don't know that I haven't seen a connection made in the media, but it's a connection I make. President Emmanuel Macron, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing that badly, of France, has proposed a radical overhaul of the country's government. Speaking at the Palace of Versailles, an interesting choice, so imperial, he proposed cuts to the parliament. He wants to reduce the number of National Assembly members from 577 to 385, and the number of senators from 348 to 232. Now, as a brand new leader who, you know, hasn't even taken over the levers of government yet, really, if I were French, I would be concerned about such a significant change in the government. You know, it's a little bit like the opposite of Roosevelt's Supreme Court packing plan, where he wanted to get 15 Supreme Court justices so that he could appoint six. Now, I mean, I'm not taking a position on this. I'm not French, for one thing. But here's a thing to consider, pro or con. France is a country that the last I heard, I think they have, I don't know, 60, 70 million people. They have a slightly smaller population than Germany, which I think is at about 85 million, roughly. The United States has about 330 million. So the United States has a population roughly four times the size of France. I'm trying to put this in some kind of a context. So the United States, between the House and Senate, has 535 representatives. And France currently has about 900 and some odd for a population one quarter the size of the United States. So this plan, 348 and 232, would bring it down to about 600, which still gives them a much higher rate of representation per individual, theoretically, than we have here. Now, in my opinion, it's possible to have too many, let's say, representatives. So, for example, if you look at the Russian Duma, I think they have something like 5,000 representatives, which is kind of nuts. Anyway, all right, I'm going to stop there for a moment and do a quick ID so I don't have to later. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. And remember, you can always support this station by going to kpft.org and clicking on donate and helping us out. We always could use someone helping us out with a little, you know, extra. And you can go to my website, thinkwingradio.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at Thinkwing Radio, or all of the above. Okay, so who's first in line, Bob? Because I can't see anything on the screen.
Oh, we have Jerry on.
Okay, let's start with Jerry. Phone number is 713-526-5738. It is open forum. Jerry, how you doing?
All right, how you doing?
I guess I'm as okay as we're going to be in this time and place in history. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing okay. I don't really worry about it quite as much as some other people do because, you know, over the longer haul, they're not going to get to do a lot of stuff they want to do, and they're going to have to undo a number of things, too. But anyway. But, you know, you see what they're doing there. You know, it's like with the health care plan, nobody likes it practically. And everything. And they're having to basically move the goalposts. Now they want a different evaluation of the Obamacare plan. You cannot do this stuff and get away with it and keep the country as a democratic republic, and expect that to work.
What intrigues me, and I mean, I hate to just automatically put a racial tinge on it, just automatically. You know, it could be partisan as opposed to racial. But it really does seem that just for spite, they're undoing anything that Obama did. Even if it might be a good thing, they're just undoing it. I mean, it's crazy. They want the water pollution levels to be higher. They want the air pollution levels to be higher. They want more workers at risk by relaxing OSHA regulations. They want to privatize more school. I mean, the stuff that they're doing is crazy. I can't think of another word. Crazy is the only word that really. Bob, I'm gonna alert you that you may have to hit the red button. I'm gonna ask you to use your discretion. But I mean, it's like they're just really being dickish.
Yeah.
Can I say that, Bob? I don't think that's one of the forbidden words, is it?
That's probably the version of Richard, right?
Yeah, that's what it is. They're just being like dicks.
Yeah.
I mean, there's almost no other way to phrase it. You know, shameless and negotiating to make the plan as mean as they can. I mean, it's there's no other word for it, really. The English language just fails at this point.
Yeah. Well, it's like they said, it's a tax plan, and it's a tax plan and not really a health care plan, and everything they're going to give, it's going to be a big giveaway to, you know, the top few percent of the population, 2 or 3% of the population, and, you know, it's just, you know, you listen to this stuff, and see, I think that's why Trump operates the way he does, is because, and his people operate the way they do. You're right, they don't have to lie half as much as they do, but they basically have to, like, keep people from finding out what's really going on, and the only way to do that is to basically muddy the water.
It is the closest we have ever come to having a ministry of truth.
Yeah. Yeah, and...
Now, the question is, when are we going to get to the ministry of love?
Oh, boy.
These are all 1984 references, guys. If you haven't read the book, reread the book. If you haven't read it in a long time, reread the book, because I'm telling you, we're living it.
Yeah. I happen to agree with you, but the thing about it is, you know, the... I think that, you know, what you're seeing right now is, you know, he's doing these ad hominem attacks. He's not really taking care of the people's business. And it's just like I said there a couple, two, 3 weeks ago, you know, basically we've got a whole slew of huge issues coming up and everything. And they don't want to do the one or the few things that they could do without too much trouble. They don't want to fix, right? Social Security, they could fix that for like 50 or 100 years.
Well, but the Republicans...
relatively with very little pain to everybody involved.
But you do understand that all of the programs FDR instituted, and I think I have a full phone bank here, so I'm probably going to have to go soon. All of the things that FDR instituted in during the Great Depression, all of those things, Social Security, unemployment insurance, any kind of social safety net, the Republicans have never liked. They've never wanted it. I mean, there have been varying degrees. I mean, the fact is that they did pass the Voting Rights Act. They did pass Medicare and Medicaid. But, of course, that was a different Republican Party. But philosophically, yeah, they have never liked anything that smacks of socialism.
Well, what gets you is, yeah, but the thing about it is that basically every advanced industrialized state in the world has a welfare state, has a welfare system.
And, of course, they do that really to keep the population happy so there aren't revolutions and civil disorder. I mean, you know,
it's there to keep the population from getting too unhappy. And even if there wasn't revolutions and social disorder, there would be a whole slew of other issues cropping up over time. You know, sometimes, you know, these things, I hate to say it, but it just gets down to sheer biology. You know, people who are miserable get sick. And, you know, you're talking about not taking care of people and all that. And, it's just like I said, there's all these new drug resistant bacteria and all that. And, you know, you got to understand what's going on there. You know, there's he's not attending to that issue at all. He's not attending to the Social Security issue at all, which could, like I said, be fixed relatively quickly.
He has hired people that appear to be appointed specifically to deconstruct the departments they're in charge of. I'm going to have to let you go, Jerry, because I don't have a screen, but I see lots of flashing lights. So I'm going to have to kind of keep track of this stuff mentally, but I think I need to take the next caller. So
okay,
but I appreciate it as always. Okay,
you know, he's not willing to take care of stuff that can be handled relatively easily, and you know, basically, we're going to get to a point with Medicaid and Medicare where, I mean, you know, something's going to have to give, and everything a lot sooner than it is with Social Security. Why not go ahead and take care of the relatively easy stuff now? But, of course, that's too smart.
No, it's greed. It really is. I mean,
I agree with you.
Got Trump, who is a stupid man who thinks he's smart, which is the most dangerous kind. And we've got the people behind him pulling levers who are just greedy for power and money. And that's, you know, I mean, there's nothing else to say. Anyhow, I got to let you go, Jerry.
Pick up the next person.
Thank you so much. Take care. Okay, Bob, who's up next?
We have the Duke of Earl.
The Duke of Earl. Hi. I'm sorry. Is that...
You know how the KPFT broadcast the reading of 1984 last week?
Yes, I caught pieces of it.
Okay. There was a TV movie I want to tell you about. We're going to get in the Wayback Machine now. It was first broadcast on December 4th, 1968. After Nixon was elected, but before he took office. The movie is called Shadow on the Land.
I've heard
and
of that.
And you Google Shadow on the Land movie, and they will give you a wealth of information where you can get the DVD, even live streaming. The story, it begins with a stormtrooper X-ing out the Constitution with a paintbrush. That is as serious as a heart attack, except instead of a swastika, they've got an outline of a double-headed eagle with ISF in it for Internal Security Force. And the background, the backstory is there was some sort of crisis, and this was 30 years before 9/11. Everybody with two cars in the garage was willing to give the president extra constitutional powers to keep them safe. And the president, or they call him the leader now, just took that football and is heading toward the goalpost of totalitarianism. And the story is, He's going to give a Christmas broadcast to the nation and lament that people in the Southwest got their power grid taken down by the so-called terrorists, which are actually the resistance. And therefore, he has to assume absolute power to give them absolute security. But there's never a terrorist around when you need one, is there? There's their own commandos to take down the first power station and create a domino effect. And the real resistance has to figure out what's going on and stop it.
A typical Orwellian tactic.
Yeah. But there's this great scene at an airport, and it demonstrates how he was able to aggrandize more power. It's Christmas. They're waiting to greet their relatives who are deplaning or get on planes themselves, and suddenly the announcement is made with no warning. Nobody's going anywhere without an internal passport. You can't get on a plane without an internal passport. There's been no announcement before this. A guy complains to a bureaucrat, but we only need an internal passport to fly coast to coast, he says. I'm just going to the next sector. And the bureaucrat says, now you need it to fly between sectors. And it shows the salami tactics that they're using to aggrandize more power. You get used to it, and then they ratchet it up. But it is a great movie. I got to tell you, I'm reciting this 49-year-old memory. It's got John Forsythe in it.
Yeah, I remember. I actually looked it up while you were talking. I have Wikipedia open. I'll look at it there and probably go to IMDb as well.
Oh, they give you a wealth of information.
Yeah.
They'll give you where you can buy the DVD. They've got live streaming. They've got YouTube clips. But it is amazing. I mean, it's a little melodramatic, but it's well thought out.
We are in a time. People should not underestimate the danger that this nation is in right now. Rachel Maddow made a point. This was perhaps couple of months ago. I mean, time passes so slowly now, it's hard to keep track of it. If you ever wanted to live forever, this is what it would feel like. She said, the longest lived republic in history is 300 years. No democratic republic in history has lasted more than 300 years, and that was the Roman Republic. And we are now something over 240. And the question is, will that record for the Roman Republic stand, or will we survive this and eventually be a democratic republic longer than Rome was?
And well, one of the things they make in the movie is that it would take a dictatorship to allow the government to torture people and ship them off to concentration camps, and we found out that wasn't true by a long shot.
That's correct.
And by Obama not just letting it go, saying let's move on down the road, he opens the door to doing it again.
Yeah, I think, you know, Obama, in his heart of hearts, certainly for his first term, he really thought that somehow he could bring the country together, politically, socially. And I think that his concern, and it's kind of like in 2006 when Pelosi said, we will not be impeaching the president, even though he had lied us into a war. So from the Republican side, I'm sorry, from the Democratic side, it seems to be all about trying to keep peace, trying not to start a cycle or perpetuate a cycle of what you might call political violence, where you impeach our guy and we impeach your guy and you indict our people and we indict your people. And I think that that is what Obama and at the time Pelosi were trying to avoid. It's like, okay, we got out Nixon, you guys impeached Clinton, we should be even now. The Republicans don't see anything about even.
Yeah, that's it. It's the politics of mutually assured destruction. Remember Newt Gingrich saying, don't say we want to defeat them, say we want to destroy them.
Yeah, I don't think it's mutually assured destruction. I just think it's assured destruction. I think the Republicans want to destroy the opposition. I have said before, the GOP is simply America's PRI. Do you understand the reference?
Party revolutionary and the institutional revolution.
Exactly. The Mexican political party that was in power for 70 years by various means. And now they're back in power, by the way. So, you know, this is power by any means, win elections by any means. I won't trust elections again until we have paper ballots that are counted by humans. It's just that simple. I will not trust elections until we have paper ballots counted by humans. I've seen too much. I've heard too much. And I mean, I know enough about electronic devices to know how easy it is to tamper with them, how they screw up. You know, I once made up a saying that when computers work well, they can perform miracles, but when they don't work well, it takes miracles to make them perform.
There's a funny story. They wanted to do a recount of a paper ballot election years after it had taken place, and the argument was the paper ballots may have been changed in storage. They had been damaged in storage.
I think you're talking about Florida.
No. This was someplace else. They said that. They said, how can the X fall off a paper ballot if it's drawn in pencil? They were actually making that argument. That the X's might have been moved in storage or something like that. But they said the paper ballot is immutable.
The Florida election between Gore and Bush, the state of Florida made every effort to destroy those ballots. And Freedom of Information Act from news organizations prevented them from doing so. And a group of news organizations did a recount. And as near as they can tell, Gore should have won.
Yeah, well, Gore made a mistake in only ordering wanting to recount four Democratic counties. If he had ordered a statewide recount, Bush would have been cut off at the knees because it was a fair recount.
Well,
Bush
at the end,
would have been looked like a coward.
At the end of the day, it was a SCOTUS coup d'etat. You had two of the nine justices were friends of the plaintiffs. You had, what's his name? All of a sudden, I'm going blank. The justice who died, Scalia.
Yeah.
He was hunting buddies with Cheney. And then you had the other guy, the quiet judge. What's his name? The one that had trouble being... Man, all of a sudden, I'm just going blank. I guess I'm just tired. No, not Scalia. I have to say it. The black judge.
Oh, Thomas.
Thomas, thank you. Yeah. Even you couldn't think of him, Bob. But his wife was on the committee to reelect Bush or to elect Bush. So, I mean, those two guys really should have recused themselves. They were too close, assuming it had to go to the Supreme Court at all, which is, you know, a question. Those two people should not have been making those decisions. They were too close to the plaintiffs. And only Supreme Court justices are not obliged to recuse. Isn't that interesting? I have to tell you, after Trump is no longer president, if there is a God willing, soon, we really need to start looking at some constitutional amendments, some laws, you know, voting machines being critical infrastructure, officially designated, maybe some other things, for example, about maybe the Supreme Court should be forced to recuse just like a regular federal judge. I mean, we need to be doing some thinking about we can't always trust that the president will have the country's best interests at heart, regardless of what his political inclinations may be. This is a kleptocracy. We are in the midst of having a corrupt, kleptocratic, deconstructive group in control of the country that is hollowing out things like the State Department and various White House staff, doesn't trust our intelligence service, may be beholden to Russia. I mean, this is serious stuff. This is republic-ending stuff. And people need to take it just that seriously, and the Republican Party is enabling.
Yeah, well, I'll let you go. I just wanted to tell you about the movie. I would encourage everyone to check it out.
But Shadow on the Land is the movie.
Yeah, it's a real report. When those vehicles pull out of the underground parking garage on their way to the power station, you don't know what's going
to
happen.
To remember that it was well-reviewed, well-thought of at the time it was released. It's worth looking into. Shadow on the Land. I appreciate you calling.
Okay.
All right, take care. Okay, so we have a couple of open lines, 713-526-5738. Everybody who calls at this point, I will try to get on the air, but it's going to be a little tricky because I don't have a working screen. Okay, Gary's on next. Gary, let me do a quick ID. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. You can support the station at kpft.org. You can go to my website, thinkwingradio.com. You can follow me at Think Wing Radio on Twitter. Gary!
How about a change of pace?
Okay, what pace do you want to change?
I want to give you some good news.
Oh, mazel tov.
Okay, because you're depressing the hell out of me.
That's how I've been feeling, man. I struggle. I just struggle not to start the show with a sigh, which I did for like the first 8 weeks.
I actually looked up the term existential angst the other day because I feel the same way. But I would like to give you some good news. It started out with bad news. I was reading the Sunday Chronicle, and apparently, you know, we're worried about Trump. You know, he's just the front man. He's out there doing a scam while the guys are in the back of the bank taking all the money.
Yeah, don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain.
The dangerous guy is Pruitt, okay? Now, in the Houston Chronicle, it was out of the Washington Post, I believe, or the Times, and they said he has, in the first 4 months, already ordered the termination or the cessation of 30 environmental regulations established by the Obama administration, including this would affect Texas, the regulation of fertilizers and explosives in warehouses.
Yeah,
and
nothing can go wrong with that.
And the Clean Air Act, clean water, right, on and on and on. Well, okay, so he's out of control. Well, the good news is today on my internet news, I saw that a federal court in D.C. has determined that he does not have the authority to stop the cessation of methane by the oil companies, and he didn't have the authority to do that, and they rescinded that order. Now, if you just look at the breadth, it's just blind man's bluff. He's just like, stop this, stop that, stop this, stop that. Like you said, Perry's in charge.
It's all about hollowing out the government. I mean, this is a Bannon thing.
All right, now, here's good news number two. So what I'm saying is people are waking up and saying, wait a minute. All right, good news number two. There were demonstrations on Sunday, I believe it was Sunday, all over the country in 20 or 30 major cities by ordinary, and you look at the photographs, and they're older people in their 60s saying, demonstrating to have Trump impeached, okay? And my favorite sign was, Make America Great Again, impeach Donald Trump.
Mm.
And they were demonstrating because of the health care situation and the kleptocracy, and they said this man has been stealing and robbing and lying and cheating since the day he took office. Good news number three, and it's tonight, you can look it up, a group of Democratic congressmen and senators, I think it's Raskin and Soto and some others, are invoking, and here's the magic words, Section 4 of the 25th Amendment to the United States Constitution, and they are introducing a bill to mandate the medical and psychological review of Donald Trump, because even the Republicans are starting to say, wait a minute.
Is this in the House or the Senate? I know I heard about this.
Well, I think
it has to get a majority in the House and two-thirds in the Senate, or two-thirds in both, something like that.
But the point is, for months now, it's like it's been out of control. Like, what the hell's going on? 1984. But finally, people like us are waking up and saying, wait a minute. We've got ordinary people out demonstrating. We've got people in the Congress saying, let's impeach this man for mental illness. All right, we have a suit, right? It was
it's actually not impeachment. It's suspension.
Well, okay, yeah, technically. And the point is that people are starting to fight back. This man is so far out. I told you last year, I mean, even before he was elected, give them enough rope and they hang themselves. This guy consistently, weekly, day after day, even they said on the news that this individual is not well. What are our enemies going to think? We are, you alienate your allies, okay, but our enemies, if I was the head of North Korea and I needed an opportunity, I'd say, well, how about one where the president doesn't even know where my country is. So anyway, I just wanted to say that people are, you know, I mean, you hear people like us and others, that, you know, especially poor old Jeff Berg, I thought he was going to have a stroke,
yeah,
ranting and raving about Trump, but, you know, and all he's done to our government. But people are starting to say, even Republicans are saying, wait a minute. All right, they're being very sneaky-like and say, well, this isn't helpful, and these tweets are not conducive to communication, under, you know, la-di-da-di-da. Everyone say, whoa, this guy is out of control. He's out of his mind. There's obviously something wrong, and people are going to take action. We're not just going to sit around and call radio talk shows. They are actually introducing a bill to have this man examined for mental illness.
All right.
It's about damn time. Thank you. Goodbye.
Okay. Thank you so much, Gary. Take care.
Your comments would be appreciated.
Yeah, I'm going to make a couple, actually, after you hang up.
Bye-bye.
I want to mention two things. Firstly, people are worried that the president can, like, pardon himself, pardon his cronies. My understanding is that he can pardon federal crimes. So any state crimes, any financial crimes, things like that, that stuff they would still be on the hook for. And that stuff, as far as we know, is being investigated. Another thing that's a really interesting point that I have not seen anybody else make, you know, during the move toward impeaching Nixon, there was debate as to whether a sitting president can be indicted, or whether you have to wait until they're out of office to indict them for a crime. But if you look at the 25th Amendment, you know, because the thing was, well, if you have a president who's indicted, he can't run the country because he's overwhelmed with his legal obligations, et cetera, et cetera. But if you think about it, the 25th Amendment makes that a non-issue. Because if you indict the president for a crime, there is a provision for the vice president to become the acting president. So I have a feeling that if you get down into the nitty-gritty of the legalisms, I have a feeling that the 25th Amendment makes it possible to indict the president, a sitting president, for crimes, because there is a backup president in the wings. There is a line of succession, acting presidents. So that's just something I want to throw out. So, Bob, who is the next one up?
Next, we have Tony.
Tony. Tony, you are, I think, on the air.
Hi, thank you very much.
How you doing?
An interesting call you just had, but
yeah,
none of this will happen. I mean, what he likes to play on Twitter, all right?
No, this is true. The Democrats are putting this thing
right
through.
No, I don't dispute that.
Okay.
I mean, just simply introducing a bill but not get it all, it doesn't mean it's going to pass and everyone will agree.
Correct.
It's just introducing. That's all that is.
But, you know, sometimes you can embarrass politicians into doing the right thing when they won't do it for the right reasons.
That leads me to my next comment make about Christie and the shamelessness of politicians. The reason they're shameless is because they know they have privilege. They know that nothing will occur. That's why they do it. They have privilege, and they simply don't care.
Yeah, Christie's running again. His political career is over.
Right, it's over. I mean, he's already gotten what he wants. He's fine.
So as long as he can't be impeached and imprisoned, he's good.
Right, right, of course. I mean, he didn't. And so Trump likes to tweet. There's nothing illegal or nothing insane about proposing to privatize the air traffic control system. There's nothing insane or illegal about being more stringent on immigration and in deportation. There's nothing insane or criminal about wanting to gut Medicaid and cut health care for millions of people. There's certainly nothing criminal about proposing a budget that offers tax cuts to certain elements of a society who are considered privileged and wealthy. There's nothing illegal or criminal about those things.
Correct.
So when we talk about impeachment, I disagree. What I'm just simply trying to, what amazes me is we have now reached a point where we see someone, I mean, when President Obama moved his wife's mother into the White House, a lot of people forget about that. His mother-in-law lived in the White House. People had a cardiac fit.
Yeah.
All the president is doing. Now, look at Trump. He's got his entire family in the White House.
Yes.
See, this is what we're talking about when we talk about what America really is. An African-American president did one small thing. This man is bringing in his entire family. They're making millions of dollars a day off the backs of the government, off the backs of the taxpayers, for their own private aggrandizement, and no one says a thing.
Now, I'm not disagreeing with really anything you've said so far, but let me ask you a forward-looking question.
Go right ahead.
Try to set cynicism aside.
All right.
How do you think this is going to play out?
I think it's going to play out just as exactly how it's playing. The people who run... See, here's another example.
Okay, let me be specific. You think...
You should have learned that the president does not run the country.
Hold on.
The president can't simply put his fist down and say, everybody does what I say, and that's the way it is.
That's true. As a matter of fact, there was an article about the fourth branch of government being the bureaucracy, and that without a strong president, the bureaucracy just kind of does its own thing. But I guess I'm trying to be specific here.
Okay.
A, do you think he'll finish out his term, his first term?
I do.
Okay, so you don't think that he'll be impeached? You don't think that he'll be pushed aside?
None of the things he's done is illegal or criminal.
Well,
I mean, unless I've missed something.
Well, yeah, I think you have missed something. I think that there are clear admissions, actually, of obstruction of justice. Clear admissions.
I don't see that the Attorney General of the United States is actually charging him with that. I haven't heard that on television yet.
Well, we do.
I haven't seen a press conference.
Okay, let's assume that the CIA and the FBI really are doing massive, parallel, complementary investigations. And let's say they do what law enforcement often does, which is they wait until they can roll up a whole organization, a whole corrupt organization. I'm being incredibly optimistic here, I'll grant.
Yeah, it sounds like you're reading a Robert Ludlum book.
Well, I haven't read one, but I take your meaning.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's not beyond the realm of possibility. Now, I'm not saying it's beyond the realm of probability.
I don't mean to cut in, because I'm going to let you get your last two callers.
Yep.
So I just want to be very brief here, and I appreciate that. All I'm simply saying is that Trump is now doing to the vast majority of the people in this country who are not people of color. He's doing that to those people now. And those are the people who voted for him. I've been in healthcare for 25 years on the business side. I know more about healthcare insurance policies I reviewed than I've worked at several major medical facilities here in the city for serious catastrophic disease. I've seen more garbage healthcare plans than anybody listening to your show, with the exception of perhaps someone like me, has seen in 25 years. And I can tell you now, there are two things that happen when you come into a hospital and you have inadequate to no insurance. Number one, you're not going to get treated. Number two, if they treat you, you're going to get a bill that will require you to go into bankruptcy.
Yeah, 60% of bankruptcies are
caused by medical
bills.
You're going to go into bankruptcy, so forget about it. Number three, when I'm the guy that tells you your policy is not going to cover a catastrophic disease that you happen to have, don't ask me the next question that you ask me, which I've heard for over 20 years. Are you going to let me die? President Trump is going to let you die, so you will die. Now you know the answer.
You know the Alan Grayson famous quote, right? The famous quote from 2009 when he said, this is the Republican health plan. A, don't get sick.
Right.
And B, if you get sick, die quickly.
You're going to die. I've heard that question God knows how many times. You are going to die if you do not get the proper
That's a great piece of video,
by the way. You cannot afford today, and you won't afford it tomorrow. Yes, you are going to die. And so, I'm just being truthful. I can't tell you that because I get fired. But, yeah, you're going to die.
Okay, Tony, you know I like to talk to you, but I've got three other callers
I want to relinquish the line. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it, Tony. Thank you so much. We'll have to have longer conversations sometime, maybe when it's a little slower day. Okay, this is ThinkWing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. You can go to kpft.org to support the station, thinkwingradio.com to follow my blogs and my show announcements, and at ThinkWing Radio for Twitter. And Bob, who's up next?
We have Johnny.
Johnny, how you doing, Johnny? You're on the air.
I got some disturbing numbers that kind of stem off of what you said earlier. First, to get a piece of paper and a pencil. How many students typically are covered by one elementary school teacher? 22, 30 students?
Class? When I was in school, it was like up to 45 or 47. I think that the number that they try to aim for, theoretically, is like 20 to 22.
Yeah, 22 is the optimum. They consider 30 on the verge of starting to be bad service per kids.
Yeah.
But if you say 30 students per class, and teachers at that level usually handle 4 to 6 classes a day, so 6 times 30 is 180 students. Let's round it up to 200. Okay, 200 students that a grade school teacher is expected to be able to keep track of and understand and know and get them along moving to, with the knowledge they need to have to function. Now, compare that to what the typical United States House of Representatives does. If you just take a 300 million population, I know it's 320 or 330, but let's say 300, or you say 200 million adults, because you got to take out the kids. 200 million adults divided by 535, I think, of representatives. Is that it?
435 representatives and 100 senators.
It's even worse. But let's go with my number.
I think it's like a quarter of a million people. I think it's about a quarter. Hold on a second. I think it's
20% of that. I think, because after all, 20% of the loudest ones who voted for George Bush a second time. Okay, 80% of the people don't bother to call their senators and congressmen. So let's say 20%. That's 74,600 people. And when you take that 74,600 people, you have roughly, the first numbers I have was actually for the 560,000, not the 373,000. But in other words, each representative would have a 40-hour work week times 50 weeks, that's 2,000 hours. You divide that by those people, they're having to make contacts of 56 people an hour, or 440 people a day, times 5 days a week,
in theory,
times 50 weeks a year.
In theory.
There's no way in hell you can tell me they have a clue as to what they're doing with the constituents, or nor do they care, as evidenced by my inability to get through to John Cornyn.
Yeah, it can seem very, very hopeless, especially when you feel like you want to reach a representative or a senator or any government individual that you feel is in opposition to you. And someone like Cornyn, who is such an ideologue, Cruz, who is such an ideologue. And Daryl Issa, who is an ideologue.
You remember what Daryl Issa did when he was the chairman of that committee? I forget which committee. And the Democrat, the ranking Democrat, the black gentleman whose name is slipping me now?
Cummings. Isaiah.
Yeah, Mr. Cummings, okay? And he righteously, angrily said to Daryl Issa, I represent 600,000 Americans, and he should have some respect and be given the time that he needs, and Daryl Issa didn't care.
No, he cut off
the
microphone.
So when you add that to the mix, that's even worse. And it's like you said earlier, they're doing everything they can to frustrate Democrats and liberals and progressives by trying to undo everything the Obama administration. And it's not just because he's black. And it's not just because of race wars they want to start.
Well, the fact that he's black is a bonus.
I'm thinking that it's more of a class thing.
I think
they see it as a win-win situation.
They're
too stupid to do the intellectual work it takes to solve resource issues by doing cooperative ventures. To them, it's a top-down model, trickle-down, and we're going to trickle on you.
Okay, I'm going to have to let you go because it's 9:48 and I've still got 3 callers I want to try to get to.
Just one piece of advice to people. Do what I've been doing for the past 2 weeks. Go to YouTube and watch Jeff Otell videos. It'll refresh your palate.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Johnny. Take care. Yeah. Thanks for calling. All right. Who's up next? M.O.D. Okay, M.O.D., I'm going to try to keep you to like 2 or 3 minutes because I've got 2 folks after you. How are you doing tonight?
Rosie.
Okay, 2 or 3 minutes. I give you 2 minutes and then a minute to rebut if I want it.
Okay, if I breathe long, it's over, right?
I'm sorry?
If I take a deep breath, I'm done.
Could be.
You see the retraction on the New York Times on June 25th of the correction of the agency's reporting of Trump Gate or with Russia.
Yeah, the CNN corrected story you're talking about?
Well, the New York Times said, you know, there was obvious collusion with Russia during the election. They retracted that.
Well, they retracted it because they didn't have enough sources. They're not saying it wasn't true. They're saying that they didn't have enough sources to confirm it.
They originally said they had all 17 bureaus, and they actually only had 4. And so that's what the correction was. And then if I go read Robert Perry, his article, and he says that these are picked individuals from the agencies were selected, sort of like what they did with Judith Miller, where she selected her sources. So that's, you know, just to that point. But the another fun fact is Trump is in bed with Putin as far as being with the Chalabad Lobatovich mafia. So Trump is in bed with Putin, but not on what the New York Times and the other medias were using.
Okay. I think I
that was two. That was a minute and a half, right?
Roughly, yeah.
Okay. So you know the Russian mafia, they have a close association with the Chalabad Lobatovich. It's a very nasty Sabbatean mafia.
The Lobatovichers?
I'm
talking about the Lubavitchers?
L-U-B-A-V...
Lubavitch, called idiomatically the Lubavitchers. I mean, the Lubavitchers might have a lot of issues that I disagree with, but I don't think they are affiliated with the Russian mafia.
Yeah, there's like several articles, and it's very historically proven.
Wow.
The head rabbi goes there, and it was in the Israel Times.
I'm just going to interrupt you because we're running out of time. There are always corrupt individuals. There are rabbis that have been arrested for crimes. The Lubavitchers as a group, as a religious sect, you know, I might consider them a little off the wall, but no, as a group, they're not mafia.
Well, so it's in their own papers and publications, and Rabbi Lazar, who's, you know, basically is seeing Putin like twice a year, basically, what's the son-in-law of Trump? He married his daughter.
Yeah, Kushner.
So and his dad was a New York developer, and he got out of prison, and Trump hired him. So it is mafia, is what I'm trying to tell you.
Well, Mike. I'm sure that Trump is mobbed up. I wouldn't be surprised if Kushner is mobbed up
with
whomever, you know, because whenever you're talking that kind of money, they want to get their beaks wet.
So they're small time compared to the family, the guy who married Chelsea. So it's another conversation because another caller.
Yeah, and I want to, and I've only got like five minutes. All right, thank you so much for calling. Take care. Listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston, Texas. I'm Mike Koenig. Bob Gartner's on controls. KPFT.org. If you want to listen online or just drop us some money, ThinkWingRadio.com and at ThinkWing Radio on Twitter. Who's next, Bob?
Next, we have Stephanie.
Stephanie. Okay, Stephanie, I'm going to give you up to 2 minutes.
Hi, this is Stephanie.
Hi.
I don't know whether to laugh or cry, but I heard a report that NASA had to refute a report that they're not operating a breeding colony on Mars, breeding children for a brothel.
That is correct. They had to refute that ridiculous, crazy claim. Yes.
Yeah, it's strange that they
I think that they should have ignored it, but who knows?
Probably so, but the idea that people believe that sort of thing. They don't believe that Sandy Hook took place. The same kind of nuts don't believe we landed on the moon, yet they're willing to believe that we have a whorehouse on the Mars or something like that.
That's an interesting, but it's probably not the same people, so I might give them that.
Yeah, possibly. Of course, on the other hand, if we did have such a thing or could convince them to, we ought to load up all the right-wing nut jobs and send them off to Mars.
You know, there's something to be said for sending the libertarians to Mars as a
mm-hmm.
colony. Because since they don't like to play well together, it's like – but I'm not going to go there. I love space exploration too much to demean it by planning for failure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to bring that out because nobody has brought that up, and that's one of the weirdest things that I've ever heard.
It just goes to show.
They're giving credence to it. They won't give us the full scoop about – what may or may not be arriving from other parts of space, but they have to open their mouth about that.
I disagree with that. I think that if they found life coming here from other planets, if SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, if they got a signal, I believe that if for no other reason than to justify their budgets, they would be the first ones to announce it.
Well, I've seen something, I don't know if it was life or not, but at a certain missile base in Germany, there was some craft that wasn't American and it wasn't Russian, and it wasn't a plane, it wasn't a helicopter, and it wasn't a rocket. And one of the things that I had to be well-versed on was aircraft and missile ID.
Well, maybe.
It made some interesting maneuvers. Mm. At the time, I didn't really consider where it was coming from. But it was coming from one of our missile bases toward another one. I was on a French infantry base, actually.
I'm just going to assume that there's all kinds of top-secret crazy stuff that they want to see if it works. Because from what I've seen of the 40s and 50s, and even the stuff they came up with in the Second World War to try to fake out the enemy, it really is remarkable what they mm-hmm. try to do. All right.
Did you see a movie about the Nazis on the moon? That was in the Daily Kos. It was telling about the refuting weird stories.
I've heard of the stories of Nazis on the moon.
Look up Iron Sky. Somebody actually made a movie on it, and it sounded like it's pretty good. It's about
Stephanie. I'm going to have to let you go because my last caller is going to have less than a minute.
Okay.
All bye-bye. Right. Thanks so much. Bye bye. All right. Who's our last caller?
Yeah, it's Doyle.
Doyle! How you doing, Doyle?
Hey, pretty good. I just thought I'd call in because, it seems like there's plenty of conspiracy theories on every side of the
aisle. Isn't it crazy?
It was kind of funny to hear the last caller, talk about right-wing nut jobs thinking about whorehouses on the moon. That was hilarious.
On Mars. On Mars. Not even the moon, plane. Which is close.
Well, the Mars, yeah. But then to follow that up with his own, UFO claims, which was okay, all right. But anyways, I just wanted to say, it's interesting, Trump's not under investigation anymore, but now Bernie Sanders and his wife are under an investigation by the FBI. I think they're thinking that he possibly colluded with the big banks to help her get a loan to buy an old folks home.
I'm going to cut you off because really I've literally got 28 seconds. What makes you think very quickly that Trump is no longer under investigation? I haven't gotten that impression at all.
Well, the FBI, the testimony of James Comey said that he wasn't ever under investigation.
No, he said something about he wasn't under investigation at the time, but he would never tell somebody that they're not going to be under investigation.
Well, maybe it's just a matter. Maybe it's just a matter.
All right, we got no time, I'm afraid. All right, call again, Doyle, please. Take care. All righty, bye-bye. All right, do I have 15 seconds? Bob, you're a tyrant. Okay, have a good week. I'll speak to you again on Friday. Bob.
Houston's premier summertime party happens this July 29th. The 31st annual Watermelon Dance and Summer Social. This KPFT benefit takes place at the Last Concert Cafe. Located at 1403 Nance Street, the Last Concert Cafe is easily found just off the Hardy McKee exit on I-10. Once inside, you'll be treated to icy cold watermelon thanks to Trader Joe's, great food, cold drinks, music to dance to, and the company of your fellow KPFT listeners. The all-day and all-night event features some of Houston's best talent, and all over a dozen musical acts will perform for your ears' delight. KPFT would like to thank its sponsors, and there's plenty of time to join Andy Upshaw, Nick Economides, Catherine Shockley, and Margaret M. Connolly Law. If you're interested, contact deadbeat@kpft.org. The door fee, which goes directly to KPFT, is $20 for one or $30 if you come as a couple. It's July 29th for the 31st annual Watermelon Dance and Summer Social, so stop dreaming. It's time to feast on the other red meat. See you July 29th at the Last Concert Cafe, Community Radio 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
Many companies will match gifts made to nonprofit organizations. A matching gift from your company will help KPFT preserve independent music, arts, news, and views for generations to enjoy. And participating in your company's matching gift program is as easy as 1, 2, 3. Step 1, make a gift to KPFT. Pledge today at kpft.org. Step 2, contact your human resources office for eligibility at kpft.org. Step 2. Contact your human resources office for eligibility